Hey there, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. It's been a little while since I've got one of these out, but I got a perfect subject for a new podcast, and that is how to maximize your off-season training. It's a subject on a lot of riders' minds right now. It's that time of year where it's getting colder, the days are getting shorter, so if you're not already in the situation where you can't get out and ride as much as you like, then it's right around the corner. And so, again, it gets a lot of riders thinking, well, what am I going to do this off season? So, first of all, just want to make sure that everybody understands the importance of off season training. And, you know, unfortunately, what happens a lot of riders when they stop riding and they don't have some sort of plan in order how to maintain or hopefully even improve their fitness over the off season, what happens is they end up in kind of this, spiral where they end up riding themselves into shape. The first part of the season. So the first part of the season is, you know, pretty miserable. As they start to get in a better shape, then it's not so bad. And so then they hit their stride and maybe they start to actually see a little bit of improvement over the season before by the time the season ends. But because they go into the off season, they don't have any sort of plan. Like I said, they end up taking like, you know, 1.5 steps back. And so again, they come into the next season and they're out of shape and they're having to ride themselves into shape. And you know, eventually that process slows down to a bit of a grind and actually starts to reverse itself, where you actually lose so much during the off season that you have a really tough time even getting back to where you were the season before. And so that's why off season training is so important. If you want to come into next season and feel like you never stopped riding, then that's where the off-season training comes in. Then you don't have to spend the first part of the season suffering. You can just hit the trail, you know, after a couple rides, getting yourself into riding shape, then you're feeling good and ready to roll, and things just progress from there. So now that we've established why it's important that you have an off-season training plan, then we need to talk about a couple things. Specifically, you want to know, again, what is the purpose of off-season training? And it's not necessarily just this, you know, oh, I want to, you know, get better. I want to come into next season with better cardio. Like that's, you know, that's better than not having any goal. But realistically, you want to know what your goals are so that you can decide which plan is best for you. And so again, if you're a 24-hour solo racer, then, you know, you want to make sure that the plan that you're picking is good for that or has those things in mind. And so what happens is that a lot of riders who actually are riding or racing for 2 hours or less are end up following programs that don't necessarily address the things that they need on the trail. And specifically, I'm talking about road riding. You know, road riding has definitely had a very heavy influence on the training mindset for mountain bikers. And when you look at the goals of a road rider and the types of rides that they do, how long they are, you know, again, not even getting into the specific differences in body position and, you know, necessary skills that are needed and things like that, you start to see that they have very different goals. Like their rides are longer, you know, their efforts are different. They're able to maintain a higher RPM spin over longer periods of time, something that we're not able to do as effectively on the trail. So again, when you look at why a road rider trains like he does, you start to see like, well, you know, there's definitely some differences. There may be some similarities, but there are definitely differences and pretty big differences between what happens physically on the trail versus what happens physically on a road ride. And so again, you just want to make sure that you're keeping that in mind. What are your specific goals? What kind of rides do you do? How long are those rides? What kind of efforts are you looking to improve upon? And then that's how you have a better idea of like, all right, what do I need to do to get better for that? So you don't want to just go into off-season training blind. You don't want to just pick a program and do it without looking at it, you know, at least through the lens of, you know, what do I want to accomplish, and just, you know, spend 30 seconds thinking about it through that lens and see if, you know, maybe something doesn't look right, or if it doesn't, great, just go with it. But anyways, that's the main thing. Don't go into your off-season training blind. So some common off-season training methods, basically how we got where we are. The most commonly used type of training is what's called periodization. And periodization is kind of a catch-all term. It was originally developed by the Soviet Union as a way to plan the long-term training of an athlete, and usually a highly skilled athlete, which I'll touch on here in a second. You know, it has been adopted by coaches in the U.S., and it usually starts with some sort of high volume, you know, low intensity, quote unquote, base training phase, followed by a gradual increase in intensity and drop in volume. And that's actually a specific type of periodization, which I'll address here in a second. But the idea of periodization, it was originally designed to help a high level athlete, not someone starting out or with just a few years of training experience. And so what this means is that a certain level of movement skill had been established by an athlete before taking on, you know, complex, hardcore, periodized workout programs, and that movement skill was maintained through the off season, through cross training and stuff like that. So the idea isn't that you don't want to use a periodized program. That's definitely not it. I use a periodized program. Periodized is just another word for planned. And so you want to definitely have some sort of planned program where I'm going to work on this, and then that's going to lead me into this. And, you know, each workout should have some sort of eye on where you're going. But, you know, while you want to follow the principles of periodization, you don't need to follow the specific methods that have been used by high-level athletes, or if you are a high-level mountain biker, you know, methods designed for other sports. And like I said, specifically, you know, kind of using a program developed for road riding if you're a mountain bike rider or you know, high-level mountain bike racer, that, you know, there may be a little bit better way to tweak things to get even better results. But, you know, probably the more the bigger message to people listening to this is that the high level athletes message, and that realistically, like I said, that the Soviets designed the periodized programs. They had a system to feed athletes into those programs. And so they had a youth athlete development system, and it didn't consist of specializing these athletes very early. It consisted of them developing a broad range of movement skills and athletic skills, and eventually being funneled towards what they were good at, and if they were good enough, eventually getting into the, you know, the state-sponsored athlete program and moving on to that next level. But the point is that the periodized programs were not designed for a, you know, 33-year-old office worker who just took up mountain biking a year and a half ago and wants to race next season, you know? So you have to look at where, you know, these really complex periodized programs that we see used by these high-level riders. Again, what we don't see is the years and years and years and years of training before that they've done to establish basic movement and establish basic strength and some of these things that I'm going to talk about here in a second. But again, that's just something to keep in mind, that if you're just starting out, if you've only got a few years of riding experience, I mean, really less than 5 years of dedicated riding experience, then odds are you don't need a program that's inspired by a high level pro. So again, you need a periodized program, but you just need to understand that you're at a different level than that pro is, and so using the exact same methods like they do is not going to get you the same results, and a lot of times leads to frustration because you don't have that base. So with that said, I want to touch on the most common type of periodization that's used by riders, and that is the long slow distance, or also known as the LSD approach to training. And it is the most common type of periodization, but like I've said, it's not the only kind. And this is the method where you build a large aerobic base. You know, usually recommended that you do it on the road on a road bike, because it's easier that way because of the large mileage that you're having to put in and the hours and hours of training you have to put in to do it. So over the course of 8 to 12 weeks, you build this aerobic base through an emphasis on this long, slow distance type of riding. And then eventually, like I said, high mileage is the ultimate goal at the beginning, and you really don't have a lot of thought given to your exact technique that you're putting into your pedaling and how you're riding your bike, or into the high intensity efforts that you need you know, we're not really worried about them at this point. There's really no thought. And again, the fact that you're riding a road bike instead of a mountain bike says that there's not any thought being given to the technique that you're using on your mountain bike and the body positions that you have to hold yourself in. Because again, like, you know, you can't, it's not as specific when you're in that road bike position as when you're on a mountain bike. So again, like I've mentioned before, it's not that you don't want to get out and use the road if the road is a good training tool for you. You need to get some rides, some longer rides in, but you don't need to do it on a road bike. But anyways, point is that as the program progresses, you're usually going to see an increase in the use of the high intensity intervals and a decrease in volume. And this approach prioritizes aerobic fitness over everything else because it's the first thing that you work on, you spend the longest amount of time on it. And so while it's effective, you know, there's definitely been a lot of successful riders that have used that approach. It's not the best way for everybody. And I'd even argue that even some people that have had success on that type of approach may have actually done a little bit better, or at least done just as good without having to put in the same amount of wear and tear on their bodies if they would have followed a little bit different approach to it, which I'm going to outline here in just a second. So again, that is just one type of periodization. That is the most common type of periodization for an endurance athlete, but it has several drawbacks. The drawbacks are primarily the amount of time and wear and tear that you put on your body. It takes a lot of time, hours and hours and hours, to record the amount of mileage that you need to build that type of aerobic base that they're going for with this type of periodization model. And so, excuse me, and so the time gets to be prohibitive for a lot of people, and then also the wear and tear that it puts on your body. You know, the longer that you're in those positions and doing that repetitive motion, the more wear and tear it's going to put on your body. So those are the two main drawbacks to that kind of approach. And what happens is that a lot of times people will follow this type of approach the first time they try an off-season training program, and they'll end up having success with it. And I'll touch on this, you know, kind of mindset here towards the end. But the basic thing is that they have some success and that they end up thinking, well, this is the way, and they just stick with it doggedly no matter what, even in the face of, you know, mounting pressures from other things on their time and the fact that they're, you know, putting off family and other things to try to record these high mileage goals that they have, and the wear and tear and the pain that they're in. And so, they'll just continue to shut those things out and follow this because, again, they had some success with it. This is what most people do. But like I said, it's not the only way. So what I recommend, the approach that I use and recommend, is to flip the priorities and make sure that you have the appropriate movement skills in the first place. So basically, can you move on your bike and pedal your bike as efficiently as possible? You then want to stress proof that quality movement through strength training and high intensity intervals. And then you want to work on your ability to sustain those efforts over longer periods of time while continuing to maintain that good form in the face of fatigue. So it's all about the efficiency of movement and then your ability to sustain that efficient movement over longer periods of time and in the face of fatigue, so that as you get tired, you don't start to revert to bad form and move inefficiently. So that is the goal of training as far as, you know, what I recommend and how I approach the program. So with this approach, it makes sure that you're working as efficiently as possible as the program progresses. And like I mentioned, it's not incurring as much wear and tear along the way. So if you just start out with long aerobic base training rides without a whole lot of thought or attention given to, you know, any sort of movement dysfunctions that you may have, then you're just going to be incurring wear and tear. You're just going to be training that bad movement. So we want to make sure that we need to establish that movement efficiency first. And like I said, it also frees up a lot more time, and it makes high-level training a reality for more riders. I mean, if you don't have 4 to 6 hours a day to devote to training, or you don't want to devote that much time to training, then you can't follow the long, slow distance approach. And so, again, if you have a job or you have a family and you know you're not a professional rider, then you know following this approach that I'm about to outline will put high level training within your reach again. You don't have to you know, do some sort of watered down version of the LSD approach. And that's the problem with the LSD approach, is that it does work, but only if you do it as it's really intended to be done. You can't do a half-assed watered down version of it and expect to get anywhere near the results from it that you would if you actually put in the time and the miles that they're recommending. So that's the catch 22 with it. It's either all or nothing. You either got to do it all the way or you need to find another way. That's what I'm about to outline for you here. So basically the workouts that I recommend for riders in the off season follows a 3-step plan. And step one is to start with movement-based workouts first. So again, you have to remember that how you move is the most important thing. If you're not moving efficiently, then you need to address that first. So these workouts, the strength training stuff, is going to focus on basic body weight exercises, use a lot of single limb loaded exercises. So if I'm going to give you a weight and tell you to lift a weight, it's probably going to be on a single limb exercise. We're not going to have using both limbs at the same time. You want to be able to focus on the quality of your movement. So you want to avoid the temptation to pick the hardest exercises possible or the heaviest weights possible. You want to be right at the edge of your ability, but not over it. You want to really, like I said, you want to be able to focus on how you're moving. And so if you're really pushing that edge, you're not able to focus on that as much. Your cardio should consist of shorter efforts, focusing on pedaling technique and body position. And so, I mean, what do shorter efforts mean? I mean, I usually recommend that one workout having, you know, shorter intervals, like anywhere from like 10 to 30 seconds. And then you have a longer workout, kind of a tempo ride, where you're starting out with about 90 seconds of work and building up from there. But with both of those, you know, the high intensity one, it's short enough that you're still able to focus on body position and technique. And then again, the tempo one, same thing. You know, we're pushing it a little bit, but you're not, you know, going so long that you're not able to focus on that stuff. So you're really trying to establish the good, efficient movement with your cardio and your strength training. The next step is to move on to, you know, quote unquote, functional strength workouts. I mean, the term functional strength it's one of those things that, you know, almost hate to use because it's got so many meanings. But all this really means is that, you know, now that you move better, your functional movement is better. Now you want to get that functional movement stronger. So that's all we're doing. We're going to be using more advanced bodyweight exercises that challenge you more. We're going to be shifting the focus to more to the loaded exercises. So in the first couple phases, you know, the bodyweight exercises take the focus and the loaded stuff is kind of secondary. And then in the next phase, we're going to shift that. We're going to shift the focus to the loaded exercises. We want to be getting strong on our deadlifts and our shoulder presses and stuff like that. But we also want to have the bodyweight stuff there. And like I said, more challenging variations. Cardio is going to, basically, you're going to work on extending your efforts with an eye on maintaining your form and focus. And there's a lot of different ways that you can do this. You know, the more that you ride, so like a downhill rider, I will mix in more combo drills, combination drills, cardio strength training stuff than I necessarily would with like a, you know, a marathon racer who I'll focus, you know, a lot more on the on-bike stuff. But the effort, the focus on the movement, the focus on maintaining that quality of movement as you fatigue is the key. And so again, we're starting with the shorter efforts. We're able to focus on that, and we're just eventually extending those efforts over the course of the program. And so finally, you move on to the third step, which is your max strength and max power phases. And so you know, these phases, they're going to focus real heavily on the development of strength or power. And I usually, you know, will end with a max strength and then a max power phase. And it's going to be built on the movement skills and the functional strength you built in the previous phases. Now, these are, you know, the tip of the pyramid. This is the, you know, the sport-specific training, whatever, however you want to look at it or call it. This is where you take things to the limit. You're really working hard. But you need to make sure that you have a really solid base to work from. And so again, that's where these early phases come in. I get riders that will get my Ultimate MTB workout program will sometimes email me and say, "Hey man, I got a lot of training experience. You know, shouldn't I just skip like the first couple of phases? They look too easy." And it's like, no, you have to, you know, establish the movement, follow this sequence. You will get better results from those last couple phases if you follow the sequence into it. And so again, each time you follow the sequence, you should, you know, get a little bit better with your movement, get a little bit stronger, you know, and that's going to give you the base that you need to get more out of these higher level phases. And so, you know, again, you want to make sure you have that solid base. Your cardio is just, it's going to continue to extend and start to resemble the specific types of efforts you use on the trail. And so, you know, the cardio definitely has an emphasis on that higher intensity side of things. But here's the thing, I just wanted to, you know, note this, that just because you don't emphasize long rides in your training program, you're not making them the centerpiece of your training program, doesn't mean that you don't need long rides in your training. So it's not an either or proposition. If you're planning on riding a solo 24-hour race, or you know, like you ride in races or you know, go on longer rides, then you're going to need to go out on some long rides, and you know, basically to help develop your mental game and rhythm over those longer rides. And so you don't want to overdo them and let them start to drag down your real training, but you do need longer rides. And again, you know, even if you're a downhill racer, you know, getting out, going out on a, you know, 1 to 2 hour trail ride is fun. It's what we do. And so you're still going to get that longer, you know, aerobic training from your trail rides and these longer trail rides. It's just, what we're doing is we're not having everything focus on that long, you know, a slower effort. And so, so that's basically the idea. Establish the movement, you know, get strong with it, and then work on your ability to extend your efforts while maintaining your form. And that's the basic idea. And, you know, if you're able to do that, then you're going to ride faster, you're going to ride longer, you're going to be doing it more efficiently with less effort, and you don't have to spend nearly as much time training because you're developing the make or break types of skills. Like there's things that you need on the trail that you don't use enough on the trail to appreciably get better at. And so that's where the higher intensity intervals, the strength training, you know, the skills drills, things like that come into play. And I'll mention the skills here in just a second, some things that you want to keep in mind, you know, that a lot of riders don't think about. But you know, just lost my train of thought there. So yeah. Anyways, I guess that's what happens when, I deviate from my notes. So, anyways, but like I was saying, the idea is that you're going to get that aerobic training effect from longer rides. It just doesn't need to be the centerpiece. You're able to focus on these other efforts. You know, like I said, that's what it was. It was the things that you need on the trail that you don't use enough. So, you know, when you're focusing on these other things with your off-season training, you're strengthening your true weak links on the trail. And so when you come up against those make or break moments, you know, those real grindy climbs, those, you know, grueling descents, the, you know, the things that really tax a lot of riders because they don't prepare for them, you know, when you're able to breeze through those things more easily, then it's going to affect your overall endurance and everything like that. So again, it's not about working harder, it's about working smarter, which is a cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason because it's true. So like I mentioned, the skills drills, like some other things that you want to think about when designing your program, things like high tension cardio. And these are the things, like I said, are the things that you need on the trail that you don't use enough on the trail. And a lot of riders don't think about, well, I need to address these things. So high tension cardio is basically your ability to sustain higher tension efforts on the trail, like a lower RPM grind where there's more tension on the pedals and you're really having to lock down and crank those pedals, or, you know, you're in the wrong gear. And so you're having to, you know, overcome a little bit harder gear, or standing up and going through a rock garden at speed, you know, things that require you to tense the core more, they require a different type of cardio than the efforts where you're sitting down and you have, you know, less tension in the core. You're able to maintain a higher RPM spin. So make sure that you're thinking about that. Skills, like I mentioned is before, something that's very underrated. I mean, if you can corner more efficiently, then you don't waste as much energy in corners. You know, so a lot of riders just keep trying to pedal their way through bad skills instead of, you know, taking the time to develop the skills that they need to not have to pedal as much. So, you know, that's the idea there. Standing versus seated pedaling, that's another thing that you need to consider, that they are two different movement patterns as far as the body is concerned. And you want to make sure that standing pedaling, it's usually most riders' weaknesses, that your off-season program, both with your cardio and your strength training, that you are addressing the standing pedaling side of riding, because you can't just sit down and pedal your way to better cardio and then expect to stand up and have that cardio be there for you, because the posture, the movement is so different that you need to train that specific posture. And then finally, just kind of an overall theme that you should have in mind is restoring natural movement and applying it to the bike. And that's what it really boils down to, is remembering that you're not a mountain bike rider. You're a human being that rides a mountain bike. And you have to address the human being as well as the mountain bike rider that you want to be with your training program. So, you know, again, it's another reason why the LSD approach, you know, is kind of detrimental for a lot of riders, is because it doesn't really give you the time to devote to reestablishing natural movement and then figuring out how to apply it to the bike, whereas the approach that I recommend and use does allow you to do that. And so, again, another reason why I think that it's a little bit better for most riders. So, you know, in conclusion, training for mountain biking doesn't have to be rocket science. You know, I mean, really, you don't need all these crazy power meter profiles and heart rate zone stuff. I mean, unfortunately, that's the sad fact, is you can't, you know, if you can improve your ability to pedal and you're pedaling cardio, I mean, obviously that's going to benefit you in some ways. But at a certain point, you can't just continue to pedal your way to being a better rider, because there's so many things that you need to be a good mountain biker that pedaling, it's just one thing. It's kind of like, you know, a boxer who does one thing really, really, really well versus a mixed martial artist who needs to have a whole lot of things in his bag of tricks. And if he walks in with just one trick, he's going to get exposed really quickly. And that's what happens with a lot of riders that really focus the pedaling. I mean, that's one of the reasons that, you know, high-level roadies go mountain biking and they struggle. You know, they can get you know, outdone by an average mountain biker, because, you know, they have one skill on lockdown, but there's other things, other types of movement skills, other types of strength, other types of things that you need on the trail that they don't have. And so, you know, again, you know, they get exposed real quickly. And so that's why you want to make sure that you're not following a program that only emphasizes pedaling, because pedaling is just one part of riding. It may be an important part. I personally think it's an overemphasized part for mountain biking. I think that, you know, there's a lot of other things that go into being a fast, dominant rider, and pedaling may be up there, but, you know, it's not like heads and shoulders above everything else. So, you know, the basic thing, it comes down to, you just want to think about what you want as a rider and if the methods you're using are the best way to achieve that. And if not, then, you know, think about what's a better way. You know, I mean, that's the idea, is just get your brain moving. I have personally changed and refined my technique so many times over the years, I've lost count. And the only, by being open to, you know, other possibilities, you know, can you continue to improve? That's the problem that most people fall into. Like I mentioned with the, I call it the fat person curling soup cans mindset. And I'd mentioned it with the LSD training earlier, where the first thing that you have success with, you think this is the way, and you doggedly stick to it no matter what happens. And that's not the right mindset. You may have had success with something, but that doesn't mean that it's the best way. And by being open to the possibility of other ways, you know, you can, you know, usually find that, you know, maybe you can do something a little bit better with your training. So anyway, that's the basic idea. Hopefully this has been informative, giving you some things to think about, you know, a better lens really to look at off-season training programs through, so that you have a better understanding of exactly what you're looking for and how to go about getting it. And of course, you know, not to turn this into a shameless plug for my programs, but obviously the easiest thing you can do is pick up one of my training programs, because every one of them I write with these basic principles in mind of establishing movement, building the strength, and then, you know, working on the ability to sustain that, those efforts longer and longer. And, you know, it's worked extremely well for hundreds, you know, if not thousands of riders by this point around the world. And so again, one of the reasons I wanted to share it with everyone going into the off season, in case you needed, you know, some more info on what to think about. And so again, like I said, even if you don't get my program, you know, there are other programs out there that you know, emphasize this. I don't know of any of them specifically for mountain biking, but, you know, there's other information, but, you know, hopefully got you thinking a little bit different direction with it. So, anyways, I'm starting to ramble now, so I guess I'll wrap up. That's the signal for the wrap up. So anyways, once again, this has been James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com. If you got any questions or comments on this, please visit me at my blog. I've got this podcast up at my blog there, and you know, post them there, and I'll get to them as soon as I can. So anyways, hopefully you've enjoyed this podcast, and I will talk to you in the next one.